we're getting fired up over miscarriage of governance, of justice at all levels. Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner, as we talk with Virginia Cruda about, sitting on over 4,000 solved cases. She represents the arm of the Democratic Party that wants social justice. Why don't you give us some criminal justice, Kim Gardner? What are you, possessed? What's the matter with you? You think she'd come on the program, Max, and we could have a discussion?
I'm thinking no.
I'd like to have a discussion with her. How can she justify? Well, if she doesn't, she's a coward.
I can reach out.
If you're gonna do something, own it. If you're the leader of an organization, own it. All right, let's go to call 314-912-1019, 314-912-1019. Speaking of justice and how to get our country back in shape as terms of law and order, we're going to talk with John Lott, Dr. John Lott, at 8:45, so don't miss that. But lots more till then, including your calls and some fun sound and other things we have. I've got the sound cut of the week with another Kamala word salad again. It's unbelievable. She needs to go back to communication school. Gene's on the line. How you doing, Gene? Gene, the dancing machine. How you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm good. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And yep, Vic nailed that thing a while back. But anyway, a couple of things I'll try to make this concise. There's a national security issue with this because NGA, National Geospatial Agency, is building that new facility in North St. Louis. There works some of the brightest people that we have to protect our national security and have family members that used to work there, et cetera, et cetera. That's a problem. Secondly, I'm in healthcare, as you know. I'm starting to have patients tell me that they're fearful of coming down to our hospital to get tests done. They'd rather have it done elsewhere. And being a worker in St. Louis with a stinking 1% head tax, I'm paying her salary. And the other two things are she gets a slap on the wrist from this loony legal oversight board, whatever the proper name of it is. And then I don't understand the legal part of this, but what in the name of God is Governor Parsons doing sitting on his hands, not throwing this woman out of office? He's probably fearful of the woke craziness that'll go on, but something's got to get done about this. This is absolutely out of control.
Well, it is absolutely the middle finger to the victims of these crimes and to the people of St. Louis. And it is absolutely an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to the prosecutorial profession. And, she makes George Gascon look like the Lone Ranger. I mean, this is ridiculous.
And that's there again, it's a glaring example, whether they like to hear it or not. Black Lives Matter, BS. There's a hypocrisy there. Why don't you stand up for real black lives that matter?
I got to tell you, for the first time in my life that I can remember, So I trained down at WashU at Barnes and Jewish and med school down there. And we used to go east, west, south, north of the hospital complex there over in Euclid area and stuff all the time and hang out with colleagues and sometimes, couples that we got to be friends with. We'd go out after, if we had a little chance, my wife would meet me down there. We'd go out. Never a problem walking around. A few weeks ago, we caught a show at the Fox and it was late by the time we got out of the garage and it was, we saw, what was it? Hamilton, right? And it was late because it was packed. So it was late when we got out of there. And I said, hey, let's go down to Central West End and walk around. So by that time, it was around 11:30. We're walking around and I told my wife, I said, I am frightened. For the first time in my life in St. Louis, I'm frightened because I know I've heard about the crime. I don't know if we should be doing this. Nothing happened. But I mean, that's the mindset, I think, when you can't help but feel differently now under Kim Gardner than you did in the past at some unspecified time. OK, and that's
right.
Not good for our city. It's not good for the businesses in our city. It's not good for the growth of our city. It's just not good for the whole metropolitan area, because when you don't, it's not going to attract business. In fact, it'll repel business. I don't know what is wrong with the citizens of St. Louis. You mentioned Parson. Now, is this an appointed thing or is this an elected? Who appoints the circuit attorney? I'm not up on that. I don't know.
I don't know, but from what I've heard on other talk shows, that apparently the governor, and I'm just regurgitating somebody's words, I have no knowledge of this, that the governor has legal authority to yank her out of office.
Wow.
I don't know if that's fact or not, but that's what I've heard what's supposed to be reliable talk show.
And that there's not outrage.
Somebody out there knows.
And the fact that there's not outrage among the people tells you that there is a cult-like problem with the failure to just acknowledge the difference between right and wrong. Maybe I maintain we are having an increasingly inattentive, unengaged population who probably doesn't know about this. Because they don't read the Daily Wire, they probably don't even read the St. Louis Most Detached anymore. Because everyone's looking at Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. Now, look, I look at those things too, but not exclusively. That's entertainment. People are not engaged with their communities anymore, and that maybe is the fundamental problem, right? Because look, if there was collective outrage and it was widespread known, I guarantee you she would straighten up her act. She's getting away with it. And sadly, the people who are being affected by her intransigence are the ones who probably don't know about it.
Oh my God. I think this is just a microcosm of what's going on across the country. And so many people have got the blinders on. They're so myopic. It's like, well, nothing's happened to me. Nothing's happened to my family and friends or whatever. So everything's just absolutely flipping fine. And it's not.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Gene. Appreciate your call. Thanks for bringing attention to this. There are ripple effects. It's not just the victims of crime that it matters.
And we also have caller Jim who would like to chime in.
Ah, Jim would like to chat. How you doing, Jim? What's going on in your world?
Hey, good morning, Randy. Well, you're a better man than I am if that was the first time you've been afraid for your life in the city of St. Louis.
Well, I try not to be, you know, I mean, we always hear the worst, right? If it bleeds, it leads. And so that's the way the news is. You don't hear about the countless acts of goodness that neighbors do for one another in all areas of the city and this country. I mean, 99% of people do the right thing. Well, 95%, maybe 90%. No, you know what I mean. Most people are generous, good, and do the right thing.
No, I do. And, it's not like when I'm in the city, I'm shaking in my boots, but you do have to be kind of on your toes, you know, and it's been that way for years.
I had someone tell me the other day, Jim, that they don't want to go to a night ball game at the ballpark. And they're worried about a Blues game if it's at night. They want to go during a daytime. What does that tell you? I didn't hear that kind of talk, at least as much, until recently, until the last few years.
Well, we've got all these concealed carry laws, but they've exempted these venues like ballparks and stadiums and from allowing people to defend themselves. And it's not like anybody's going to have to defend themselves at a ball game. You know, I mean, I guess it could happen, but it's really on your way back to the parking lot that all this stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you've got to basically disarm, and people know that. Walking out of that stadium, people are not armed. And that's, you know, it's ripe for the picking right there for some of these people. But the point I want to make is the language we use. I think there's a couple of things here that I guess I could unpack if you give me a minute. One is, let's talk about social justice. Instead of griping about what Kim Gardner's not doing, we ought to turn the tables on her and talk about social justice for the victims and the victims' families. Where is the social justice there? And the Republican Party, by and large, ignores that. I mean, you know, your last caller talked about Governor Parson. I'm not sure what he constitutionally can or can't do. Gardner's an elected official. But certainly it was a crime, and it was a crime committed in the state of Missouri. And we've got an attorney general right now running for the Senate who's not lifting a finger for any of this. He's out filing lawsuits against Biden, which is fine. I mean, you got to do that too. But nothing's being done around here, and we've got a Republican stronghold in the legislature and in Jefferson City, but nobody pays attention to it. And believe me, I live up in North County. People are aware of this. It's not like everybody's blind to it. It's just the help's not there. And if the Republicans want to do some real electoral mining here, they could do it and make these kind of issues important. But you've got to talk on the terms of what people are used to hearing. Okay, if Kim Gardner wants to talk about social justice, let's get all these victims' families and get Eric Schmidt together with them and start working with them on maybe the state can do something. Maybe he's got the power statewide to do some kind of takeover of these cases. I don't know.
Yeah. But this is just tragic. Yeah. It's tragic for the victims of these crimes. And this little 8-month-old whose baby died of a drug overdose while in the care of another person. I mean, my God, can you imagine living with that? And it's and not you're not going to bring the kid back, but at least you'd like to see some justice done. That's all, you know?
Right. You know, so where is that justice? You know, and we keep getting back to criminal justice. Well, the left owns the debate on that, and criminal justice, you know, there's an impression there that that's just all about punishing people who are innocent, which we know it's not. But okay, let's talk about social justice then. Allowing these people to go free after they've committed murder, you know, and never be prosecuted. And the Republicans aren't in on this. They're not part of the solution. Once again, they're standing on the sidelines saying, what's a city problem or, you know, a St. Louis County problem? Yeah. But it's not.
A lot of candidates for the in the primary season have been running on law and order in various jurisdictions. And so hopefully that's going to bubble to the top as one of the top three things in the midterms. No doubt about it. I mean, law and order, both at the border as well as in our cities and our counties and states. You know, I mean, we've got to get back to that. The abject truth. You cannot deny the truth that as prosecutors have gone soft on crime, no bond stuff in New York and the Gascon out there, those places are just infested rat holes with nothing but criminality and people pooping and putting their used needles on the street and homeless folks. We've got to get back to, I'm sorry, we've got to get back to there is a right and a wrong. You're either going to get obey the law or not. Hey, I got to run, Jim, but thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks, man. Appreciate you weighing in.
All right.
Before we go to break here, I want to play the clip of the week in terms of some word salad. You know, Kamala continues to be the gift that keeps on giving along with Joe Biden. And here is what she had to say the other day when she was talking at the Association of, the Asian, Association of Southeast Asian Nations. So it's AZEAN, ASEAN. Here's what she said at that conference. Tell me if you can make any sense of it.
That is especially true when it comes to the climate crisis, which is why we will work together and continue to work together to address these issues, to tackle these challenges, and to work together as we continue to work operating from the new norms, rules, and agreements that we will convene to work together on to galvanize global action. With that, I thank you all. This is a matter of urgent priority for all of us, and I know we will work on this together.
Max, how many times did she work together on that? Well, I counted at least five.
I'm just wondering if we're going to work together or not. I was a little confused about that.
Well, we'll head across this break here, and during it, we'll work together to continue to bring you great programming here on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. You're listening to the Randy Tobler Show.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day. It was never about censorship, policing speech, or removing content from anywhere. Its function was to keep Homeland Security officials aware of how bad actors, including human smugglers, transnational criminal organization, and foreign adversaries could use disinformation to advance their goals. As Secretary Marcos said, he has asked former DHS Secretary Michael Chernoff and former DAG Jamie Gorelick to lead a thorough review. This is the pause that I was talking about, an assessment as members of the bipartisan Homeland Security Council Advisory Council. The board will not convene during that period.
Well, that was Karine Jean-Pierre, the new White House press secretary, reading off of her pre-prepared press sheet. Boy, is she a disappointment after Jen Psaki, talking about the so-called pause in the DGB, not the KGB, but almost as bad, the Disinformation Governance Board, which is on pause. And of course, Nina Jankowicz, the singing nun, is no longer going to be doing that. Erin Hawley is with us now from Independent Women's Forum, senior legal fellow there at the Independent Women's Law Center. Erin, a victory for the conservatives, huh? They at least got a pause in that. Where do you think this is going to go?
Absolutely. I don't see how there's any way that the Government Misinformation Board will ever come into being. The name itself is a terrible idea, as is the idea of the government picking and choosing what speech it thinks is acceptable. That's just not the role our founders envisioned for the government.
Yeah, and I think that I think there's been enough of a pushback now from certainly started on the right, but I'm hearing in more and more moderates that are, and maybe it's been propelled a little bit by a lot of Elon Musk's talk about free speech on the privately owned, you know, Twitter platform. But I think more and more Americans I hear around the water cooler and at the lunch table are like, hey, I'm not comfortable with other people determining what I need to hear. Are you hearing that too from more and more centrist, right of centrist, and not just the right?
Absolutely. And in fact, the left and right both have long been sort of stalwart defenders of the First Amendment, and for good reason. The First Amendment guarantees to everyone the right to have their own opinion. There are gobs of Supreme Court cases saying that the government can't tell you what to think or what to say, and that actually the remedy to misinformation is not censorship or suppression, but rather more speech, that we are entitled to have and to share our own opinions peaceably. And that's how our country has functioned for 200 some years. And the idea that the government should take a hand in picking valuable speech and declaring some not valuable is really an anathema to our founding documents.
Yeah, and I wanted to play for you something that was a Veritas, Project Veritas, caught a Twitter executive just with the prima facie evidence, Erin Hawley of the Independent Women's Law Center, of how there are an elite group of people that are absolutely infiltrating the most influential platforms across America, including Twitter. This was a Veritas undercover investigation with a Twitter executive demonstrating the arrogance, the hubris of who's going to control the information flow. Listen to this. Twitter.
Well, right now we don't make profit, so it's going to say ideology, which is what's led us to not being profitable.
The rest of us who have been here believe in something that's good for the planet and not just to give people free speech. Because again, like, these people really do believe in what we're doing. These are the policies we've put in place for misinformation or mislabeling media or whatever.
Yeah, so the misinformation, like the Hunter Biden laptop that was nothing but Russian collusion to try to misinform, that never made it before the election in 2020. I mean, I think the elite emperors are losing their clothes. What say you?
Absolutely. And this idea that some of the most powerful platforms for disseminating information should do so based on ideology is just really scary. And of course, they're private companies, but the fact is they get benefits by virtue of Section 230 that immunizes them from selecting content. And so maybe that's something that the government should consider doing something about. If they're going to pick and choose speech winners, then these private companies shouldn't get special privileges. And it's particularly concerning when you have people like Jen Psaki urging Twitter and Facebook and these other large social media platforms to censor speech. Here you have the government encouraging that, and the government doing it would be plainly unconstitutional, but it's a fine line to draw when the government encourages private companies. So all of this idea that we can tell people what to say is really scary.
And I know that, you know, it goes back to the Obama administration. If you look at the, it was reported that the, you know, the visitor logs at Obama, if I'm not mistaken, said that if not the most, close to the most number of visits made to the Obama White House were by Google executives. And we know that there was collusion there in terms of manipulating search engine, you know, searches and so forth. Now, I know your husband, Josh, our great senator from the state of Missouri, has been a vocal advocate for Section 230 reform. Let's do some hypotheticals. If the midterms turn out to be, well, the way things are looking, I mean, approval ratings among Biden, which usually has coattails in the midterms, have gone from 26% or 55% in Hispanics to 26% now, from May of last year to now. Disapproval, 29% last year to 60%. Now, that's Hispanics. The black approval rating going down. It appears as though there may be a tsunami that could lead to both chambers of Congress being, you know, Republican. Do you think that Senator Hawley and others can mount enough of a 230 battle to make these platforms regulated and suable like regular publishers are that have editorial responsibility? Is there a possibility that could happen?
You know, I'll let, you know, those offices speak for themselves, but I do think that there is real concern when you have huge platforms that provide most of the news information that the American public consumes, picking and choosing speech winners, and also being immunized from any lawsuit that says, hey, you discriminated against my speech or those sorts of things, or you took it down unlawfully. And so I think this shield is something that certainly will be of interest post-midterms, and should be, because, again, most Americans get their news from these types of sites, and the idea that we should stifle speech while having sort of government privileges just doesn't seem like a good idea.
We're talking with Erin Hawley, Independent Women's Law Center, senior legal fellow. If I can switch gears just a little bit, because there's something that I know has really worried many people across, I think, all lines that really are responsible thinkers and citizens of this great country. In the wake of the irresponsible and unprecedented leak of Justice Alito's draft of the, you know, on that Mississippi case, and then the protests in front of the justices' houses, which is clearly, I think it's Section 45507 of the United States Code, against, you know, trying to influence judges by, you know, protesting in front of their houses. You know, it's widely known that your family, you had people knocking on your door, you know, what was it last year after January 6th? Can you bring some personal insight into what it's like to be, you know, the wife of a public official and have protesters invading your private space and knocking on your door, and how that relates to this whole protest movement against Supreme Court justices? And I'm thinking about Amy Coney Barrett, who I think still has kids at home like you did. Can you just bring a little personal reference to that, if you wouldn't mind?
Sure, absolutely. Well, as everyone on both the right and the left should be able to agree, protesting at night in front of someone's home with bullhorns and candles, that could be scary if you are home alone with a baby girl, as I was, or if you have young children like Justice Barrett does. And the idea that the White House has not come out and condemned this is just unconscionable. No one should be afraid in their own homes. There are rightful places to protest, but someone's home is not that place.
Well, we appreciate that, because there is nothing that is a sanitizer like shining the light on miscarriage of propriety. I mean, much less legality. It's just propriety, and it doesn't shine well on them. Okay, if they want to have their pro-abortion stance, that's fine. Do it on the steps of the courthouse. But for crying out loud, we have lost all civility in this country, and I'm glad that Hey, thank you for being with me this morning. Really appreciate your comments, and we'll continue to follow you and all of the great work done there at Independent Women's Forum and the Independent Women's Law Center. Erin Hawley, appreciate you much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. You too.
Well, there she is. And, you know, can you imagine what that is to have someone knocking at your door protesting because of something that you didn't have? I mean, what is wrong with people? Pinch yourself, ladies and gentlemen, if you endorse that. If you're listening and you're on the pro-abortion side, okay, that's fine. You have a right to have that opinion. But please call the Ruth Sent Us organization who's behind most of these protests and say, hey, stand down. It doesn't bode well for our cause. It really doesn't. I mean, you know, the rest of us will sit around and watch you self-immolate politically because no one with a reasonable conscience could endorse that. And by extension, the ideology behind it. That's just the way I feel about it. I don't know. Hey, speaking of Karine Jean-Pierre, I love that. She is flummoxed and absolutely lost in space at her first press conference when Peter Ducey asked her about a statement that Joe Biden, it was actually a tweet, the White House had put out a tweet, and Joe Biden has said as much too in statements that somehow, you know, inflation, you know, taxation, including increasing taxes on rich people, will somehow solve inflation. And, well, Peter Ducey challenged Karine Jean-Pierre about that. And it gets even better with the visual. But here's what the audio sounds like. Listen how she answers the answer, but never answers the question.
The president's Twitter account posted the other day, you want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share. Mm-hmm. How does raising taxes on corporations reduce inflation, though?
Are you talking about a specific tweet?
He tweeted, you want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share.
Look, you know, we have talked about this past year, about making sure that the wealthiest among us are paying their fair share. And that is important to do. And that is something that, you know, the president has been, you know, working on every day when we talk about inflation and lowering costs. And so it's very important that, you know, as we're seeing costs rise, as we're talking about how to, you know, build an America that's safe, that's equal for everyone and doesn't leave everyone behind, that is an important part of that as well.
But how does raising taxes on corporations lower the cost of gas, the cost of a used car, the cost of food for everyday Americans?
So look, I think we encourage those who have done very well, right, especially those who care about climate change, to support a fair tax code that doesn't change, that doesn't charge manufacturers, workers, cops, builders a higher percentage of their earnings, that the most fortunate people in our nation, and not let that stand in the way of reducing energy costs and fighting this existential problem, if you think about that as an example, and to support basic collective bargaining rights as well, right?
The simple question is, what does increased taxation on corporations have to do with curbing inflation? She went, you got to give her credit. She's reading, by the way, she's reading through from some bullet point statements, clearly. That she's reading the thing. And she went, by the way, Max, I don't know, but, you know, they've been, there's a new company developing called KamalaCommunicates.com.
Oh, I like it.
And Karine is one of the premier poster children for that. You know, that was a Kamala Communicates moment there, right? I mean, she was all over the map. Somehow corporate taxes had to do with the green energy and, corporate collective bargaining for unions. I mean, she covered every Democratic agenda there, didn't she?
They must have told her, if you don't know the answer to a question or if you can't make the president look good, read your notes. Because she just picked up her notes and started reading.
Right. And after Joe Biden either decides to run and loses or gives it up and Kamala decides to run and really loses, it'll be KamalaCommunicates.com. I'm going to put a domain reserve on that and see if she'll be interested in buying it, because that was a perfect example. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk with John Lott and his thoughts on the Buffalo shooting and what we can do about all of this gun violence. Take away your guns. Take away the... Hey, what's wrong with these Americans that don't want gun control? Well, John Lott has a thought about that. Straight ahead on the Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL.
Well, it's 8:42, and thanks for being with me. If you don't get a chance to catch the program live, you can catch an encore performance tomorrow evening, 9 to 12, or anytime on the podcast, which will be up later today. Hey, it's always a real privilege to talk to Dr. John Lott, author of Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched, quote, Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control, and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And there's so much to talk about. Dr. Lott, thanks for joining me this morning. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on.
So once again, the blood hasn't even dried from the victims of a mass shooting in Buffalo or the one the next day in Laguna Woods. And there's cries all over from the political to the media, collusionary industrial complex for gun control. Take the guns. Another example of gun violence. What's wrong with you people who don't want those AR-15 assault weapons to be taken from us? And you have been so adept throughout the years of using quality academic research to show that actually the opposite is the truth. Is there any hope that at some point Americans will start to look at the objective evidence that we need to put guns in the hands of responsible citizens rather than take them away? Do you have hope?
I don't know. I mean, the polls are kind of moving in the right direction now in terms of whether people support more of these regulations or not. We just put out a study recently just kind of showing how misinformed Americans are about gun crime. So we asked a question, what percent of violent crime do you think involves guns? And the average response was 46%. But what if you actually look at the data from the FBI, what you find is that less than 8% of violent crime actually involves guns. I mean, it's not too surprising that people believe this. The media is constantly focusing on gun crimes. You have President Biden, obviously, has a single focus on guns and not, you know, trying to reduce violent crime generally. And you have public health out there who's also focusing only on gun crime. And, interestingly, the people who have the most erroneous guesses about what percent of violent crime involves guns are also the ones who most strongly support additional gun control. It's something that I think affects a lot of people out there. And, I'm not surprised. If you think that over 50% of violent crime involves guns, whereas the actual number is less than 8%, it's not too surprising that they view more gun control and not, let's say, just having police go and enforce, arrest criminals, that you get those types of responses.
The other sad thing, again, it seems like the interval between the event in these mass shootings and the political rhetoric that starts the agenda-driven cycle of the news cycle that ignores some of the facts and the truth and the realities and is all about the narrative was all about Tucker Carlson and anyone like Randy Tobler and maybe John Lott who want tight borders. Because we don't want our country infiltrated by people whose first action is to disobey our laws and who bring socialist right. agendas into the country without regard to their melanin content. That's not what it's about. Yet, immediately after this, we are vicariously responsible, according to MSNBC, CNN, the major news networks, for that shooter and his crazy demonic outburst. I mean, it's hard to process that, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's so at odds with the facts there. I mean, here, everybody from the Los Angeles Times to New York Times to NPR and everybody else, even Fox, was basically describing this attacker as a right winger. You can go to our website at crimeresearch.org. We have a copy of his manifesto if people want to read it for themselves. And the guy is a racist. He is a nut. But his racist views are based on environmentalism. the guy refers to himself as an eco-fascist national socialist. He refers to himself as a left-wing authoritarian. His motivation for why he hates minorities is because he says they have too many kids and that he's worried about overpopulation. He wants to dramatically reduce the population in the world. And he's upset because of his belief that Hispanics and blacks tend to have larger families than European whites. So you have the New York Times attacking Newt Gingrich, saying that he's the intellectual godfather for this killer. And, I want somebody to tell me one Republican in Congress or the Senate or a governor someplace or something else who's going out there and saying that we need to stop blacks and Hispanics from having so many kids. I've never even heard of something like that. But the only people who say that type of rhetoric are people on the left. I mean, you have AOC questioning whether people should even have any kids because of the environmental damage from having kids. You have Biden and his whole administration talking about the existential threat to the environment from climate change. So, you know, this guy is obviously an environmentalist fanatic here, but the media, you will search in vain to see the media bringing that up because it goes so much against their narrative. But, you know, they're the ones who are scaring people about the end of the world. And, you know, it's not too surprising then that because of that, they end up having a situation where they have some people who they've scared into thinking that they need to do something. But it's not this case. I mean, everything from the New Zealand mosque shooter to the El Paso Walmart shooter to the Dayton, Ohio shooter, you know, these were left-wing type people. The Walmart shooter and the New Zealand shooter have virtually identical manifestos to what this kook had. But the media goes and describes them as right-wingers. It seems like any time somebody's a racist, the media immediately goes and says, well, you know, they're a right-winger. And even though these individuals themselves call themselves socialists, and even though these murderers call themselves environmentalists.
And the media selectively ignored the fact that the shooter at the baseball diamond, who was a Bernie Sanders supporter, was widely, clearly there was separation by the victims themselves and the Republicans around them to make clear that it was not about Bernie Sanders. They took the high road and said this, but we are not making that relationship. And yet at the first opportunity, the media and the left will always try to make that association.
Yeah.
We had the recent McDonald's shooter.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you have the subway shooter in New York City who was a black nationalist. You have the person who drove the SUV into the Christmas parade in Wisconsin, hated whites. But, you know, the media doesn't cover those types of stories. You know, there's other types of bias here, too. If you read this murderer's manifesto for Buffalo, what you find is that this guy, why he picked the target that he did. He explicitly talks about going to a target where he knows victims aren't able to go and defend themselves because he talks about it being much easier. Now, there was an armed uniform guard there, but what people don't seem to appreciate is what an incredibly difficult job an armed, uniformed guard has. This murderer actually cased the place before he engaged in the attack. And if you know that there's only one person there who's armed and he's in uniform, what do you think you do if you're going to go and attack? Who do you think you take out first? Because he knows if he takes out that one person there, he's going to have free rein for the rest of the place. And, you know, it's, you go through and you read this. He picked an AR-15 because he knew it was going to upset people and result in a push for more gun controls. You know, several of these killers, like the El Paso killer or the New Zealand killer, they explicitly talk about going, you know, that gun control is going to be pushed. The Ohio shooter talked about gun control being pushed after his attack. This is something that these guys seem to view as a positive result that's there, but you never see the media going and talking about those parts of their manifestos and other things that they've left there.
No, it's selective and irresponsible reporting. We want to recommend everyone spend some time on crimeresearch.org. Dr. John Lott is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And we thank you for being with us, sir. It's really always a pleasure to talk with you and really putting the truth right squarely in front of the American people. Thanks for all you do. And thanks for being with me this weekend.
Well, thank you for being there. I greatly appreciate it. Thanks.
There he is, Dr. John Lott. And it's so important that you arm yourself with the facts, ladies and gentlemen, because you will have these debates. The Twitter feed the other day on Waukesha, when that was brought up as a hater, a black racist, was dismissed by the Twitter commenters I saw in the threads that followed as, no, he was just driving away from a domestic dispute. The truth couldn't be further from what was said on those threads. Learn the truth, and you will destroy wokeness, and we will return this country to the way it needs to be. Remember, this week, and as always, let faith, freedom, and family guide you in all the challenges we face as we continue to keep this country the greatest the planet has ever seen. Thanks for being with me. For Max, I'm Randy Tobler. See you next time.
In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born. With a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me as he died.